Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Kaboom! It's gonna blow up! Just wait! 6-year-old Donnie and his 5-year-old cousin Jay were having another heated discussion. They had been promised seats with their Uncle Stan for the opening game at the stadium. Now that the country was at war, Donnie wasn't so sure he wanted to be in a big place with a lot of people. "We'll get hot dogs," cajoled Jay, "and lots of good stuff. Come on, Donnie." Donnie shook his head. "If those guys can blow up buildings, they can blow up a stadium. It's too scary. If you want to get blown up, you can go, but I'm not going."
"How about if we get a policeman to be with us?" offered Jay, now feeling a little uneasy himself.
"They can spot bad guys, you know."
"Oh, yeah." Donnie's eyes narrowed. "Well, maybe they can't spot all of them. You just wait. Kaboom!"
From a parent's perspective, how can we best help our children when they're living in a wartime environment? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest can help us investigate some of the problems that arise when we're raising kids in a time of war. Ned Lazarus is director of the Seeds of Peace program in Jerusalem, the follow-up program for Israeli and Palestinian youngsters who have completed the summer peaceful coexistence program for teenagers from war-torn countries. This program brings together youth from opposite sides of a conflict to learn the tools for making peace with their enemies. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Ned.
Thanks very much. I'm glad and honored to be here.
Why don't you tell us a little about Seeds of Peace?
Seeds of Peace is, just as you described it, a program that's dedicated to humanizing the enemy and bringing together kids who grow up in a situation of conflict, helping them learn to live together with the other side and learn to build a relationship that's nonviolent and is built on solving their problems through discussion and building a relationship of peaceful coexistence.
What countries do they come from?
Well, the program is now working with, I guess, 5 different conflict situations. Our main program, our first program, is in the Middle East with Israel, the Palestinians, and the Arab world. We've also been working for several years with kids from Cyprus, which is an island divided between its Greek and Turkish population, and with kids from the Balkans, from Serbia, Croatia, Bosnia, Albania, Kosovo, and Macedonia, and kids from India and Pakistan. We also always bring American kids into the program. They often share ethnic backgrounds with kids from the conflict areas, but because of their common experience of growing up in America, we feel that they can contribute a great deal to showing the kids from the conflict region how it's possible to live together in the same society. And one more program, which is very relevant, I think, for America after September 11th, the Portland, Maine area, which is where our summer camp is, has a huge immigrant population, refugees who've come from Somalia and different places in Africa and Asia, and of course a population of people who've lived in Maine for many generations. They have asked us to bring kids from their school system, representatives both of the immigrant community and of the veteran Maine community, so that their teenagers can get to know each other and can help defuse the tensions that have been in their school system between the immigrants and the old-timers, let's say.
What would you say is the biggest issue for kids in wartime?
I'd say that the biggest issue for people in wartime, I think, is first of all safety and a sense of security. But the special issues for kids, what I would say that is most important for parents and older people to provide is really a sense of the future. You know, these kids, continuing to keep them focused on their growing up, what are they going to be in their life, to give them both a sense of hope and a direction so that they are not steered off course by all of the events of the day. It also keeps them working and focusing on something other than the conflict itself. kids that are growing up still need to grow up. When the war is over, or even if the war isn't over, these kids will still have to be adults. They will still have to maintain the society. And it's one of the most difficult but the most important thing for parents and for community institutions to do is to help keep kids on track as much as they can and help keep the kids, let's say, out of the front line of the conflict and thinking about their own future. Our latest magazine, which we published, which is written by the kids from all of the different countries that we spoke about, the cover says, "Remember the Future." And one of my colleagues, Samuel Jundi, who's a Palestinian man from East Jerusalem, came to work the other day and, you know, he said his 10-year-old son came home from school and said to his mom, you know, "Mom, I want you to make me a big dessert." That was one of his favorites. And he said to him, "Well, listen, you know, can't eat that right now. What are you going to eat this when you come home from school before dinner every day?" And he said, "Well, you know, I'm going to die anyway.
Might as well die fat and happy."
Right. So what's the difference? I think that those are the kind of very difficult ideas that, you know, a 10-year-old boy doesn't feel like he's going to continue. And I think right there, what Sammy did and what he does for all of our kids, which makes him such a wonderful partner, was to tell his son, no, what are you talking about? You know, you have to grow up and you're going to bring me grandchildren. And he reminded him of his dreams, you know, of what he wants to do in his life, and said, you just keep focused on that. And I think that's a very difficult job and a very important one, making sure that children feel they're going to grow up and have a life.
The everyday fears come through. I read an article the other day that included a story of someone in the last few weeks in an Israeli town taking a child to buy shoes. The father drove up. The mother and child jumped out of the car. The father kept the car driving around while the mother and child ran in, bought the shoes as fast as possible, and ran out, jumped in the car, and they went home. And I thought, for children to live under those circumstances, the child needed the shoes. How do you go out and get the shoes if you're living in such frightening surroundings? And that's the description.
One of the hardest things, I think, for parents, parents would like to, first of all, ensure their children's safety. And second, they'd like to provide the most sheltered environment they can for their children. I think one of the most painful things for me to witness is how disempowered, how helpless parents are in a situation like the situation in Israel and Palestine right now, where very tragically the leaders, let's say, of the respective sides feel that it's necessary to fight a war, not on battlefields, but right in the middle of the ordinary places where people live. And this, it's very painful for parents. It takes away a lot of their power to protect their children and their power to provide them with an environment that gives them some protection, some distance from the fighting.
It would seem that in situations like this, it would be even more important for parents to stick to rituals and routines of daily life as much as possible. Be sure that you have dinner, as you were saying, that your colleague was talking about. Be sure that you celebrate whatever the holidays are. Be sure that you do your homework because you expect to go to school the next day.
Absolutely.
Kind of thing. And I would think that that also translates for areas that are not quite as terribly war-torn, like the United States, where there's still a tremendous amount of anxiety and there are different things that pop up from time to time, terrible catastrophes in communities, but the kids still need to remember that they have to do their homework. They're going to continue living.
Absolutely.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion of children in wartime.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Ned Lazarus of Seeds of Peace about children in a time of war.
Some of the most amazing things that I've seen are parents who have, despite everything, provided an environment where their children feel safe, feel happy. There's a Palestinian family that lives in a refugee camp outside Hebron. They lived, even before the Intifada, before the current conflict in the most difficult conditions you can imagine outside of their house. Nothing is right outside of their house. There's sewage in the streets, and the streets are all torn up anyway. Outside of their house, the people are poor. The children are running around barefoot. Outside of their small refugee camp, there are always soldiers on patrol, and they have no power to influence that. They have no control over that. When I or any other guest walked into their home, you would not know that outside of their window there's a human tragedy going on. Their home is warm. It was full of laughter. It was full of light. It was painted brightly. And the parents were always joking, were always, very warm with their children. Their children felt very comfortable there. And their daughters, one of them is now in college in the United States. The second one has now won a scholarship to study here. Their daughters are remarkable, proud, strong, and intelligent, and peaceful people. How they manage to do that is just a remarkable testament to the ability of love and, patient but very, very strong parenting to raise children successfully. And the peace of their home was invaded. What they did was provide a space in the world, a home space that really feels like a home for their children, and the results speak for themselves. One of the great things that I'm proud of that we managed to do was to connect this Palestinian family with the family of an Israeli girl who were participants in our summer camp in Seeds of Peace. And in this family also, when you walk in their home, you would not know that there's a war outside. They have Shabbat dinner every Friday. They have special games that they play at that dinner table that the father, orchestrates and made up. I think the teenage girl, she felt kind of funny the first time we came over and her father was playing these games with everybody, but really it just created this sense of coziness. The kids all walk around in big animal slippers and you could see that everyone feels home. There's an environment for children who are growing up there. And those two girls met at our summer camp and became friends with each other. And the parents supported their girls, supported that relationship and supported their girls came home and said, wow, I made this great friend. She's a wonderful person. And the parents, without knowing each other, trusted their children, trusted their judgment and supported them being friends with each other and even invited each other to the rituals that you were talking about that are so important, that give a sense of culture and identity and grounding to the kids. And they shared those with each other. The Palestinian family came for Shabbat and for Hanukkah and shared in those rituals. And the Israeli family came during Ramadan to share a meal there. These were before, I guess, the conflict reached this level of conflagration. But those experiences, it was one night. Wasn't necessarily such a remarkable thing. You were inviting some people over for the holidays, but it really was. I think that the light that they provided in those moments is something that keeps on in their children's hearts and will give them the kind of strength to see forward into the time that they're going to be parents, into the time that they're going to try and create a better environment for their children.
Ned, when we as parents are uneasy ourselves, how do we manage to allay our children's fears?
I think that we have to remember that we ourselves are human beings, that this difficult situation affects us as well. I read a book called Trauma and Recovery at the beginning of the Intifada because I was dealing with kids who really were traumatized and because I myself was afraid and was jolted by the terrible scenes I was witnessing. And one of the things that I've kept with me from that book was it said, to be an effective counselor, you have to remember to take care of yourself. The same things that are very helpful and important for the people you're counseling, giving them the chance to speak, giving them a non-judgmental environment in which they can express what they're going through and not have to bottle up inside themselves all of these emotions and these scenes, you need that yourself. I think that parents, it's very important to have friends It's very important for them to work with each other. We, as counselors or as parents, need to also have outlets, people that we can speak to about what's going on and help. I think that relatives, that friends, that community programs are extremely important resources. Even if you're not a deeply observant person or a believer, just to participate in rituals together with the community makes you realize that you're not alone. And this is important for you as it's important for your children. It's actually very important for them to be able to speak about the things that they see and what they're thinking and ask the questions that they need to ask. Once they can sort of remove those issues that are frightening them, then they'll be able to focus on the larger goals. You can't take away the fears. The fears are of a real problem.
What are some common misconceptions that adults have about kids' needs in an environment that no longer seems safe?
We all know adolescents often have trouble in their relationships with parents and, you know, are sorting out the issues of growing up themselves. This is no different in a conflict situation. They're still teenagers. They still have to grow up. And, you know, they still sometimes have issues with their own parents. One of the ideas that comes from terrorism, from war, is that the world outside is hostile, that you can't trust anybody. And I think this is something that limits people's ability to grow and to make friends and to create relationships. One of the things that our kids have been doing this year, as, you know, meeting in public places has become unsafe, they've been inviting each other to each other's homes. In Haifa, which is a city in Israel where there's an Arab and a Jewish population, which has also suffered from two terrorist bombings this year, we have a large group of kids, participants in Seeds of Peace. And we've been active all year doing many meetings in different places in Haifa. But as the situation grew dangerous and it became difficult, you know, for parents to put their children in public places to meet in a restaurant or a cafe because there's a great deal of fear and there's a security threat, parents invited children to have a meeting in their home. On Christmas, one of the Christian children invited the Jewish kids to come and share in their holiday. And actually on Passover, in one of the most frightening times, when we ourselves in Seeds of Peace actually postponed our activities and said, right now we don't want to, you know, bring you out to a public place, one of the Jewish families invited the other kids to come for a Passover meal. And I think it was remarkable both that the Arab and Jewish parents trusted each other and sent their children. And also, they were providing, again, they had a safe space in their own home that they'd successfully created, and they were sharing that. And, you know, when the world has become scary and the safe space is so hard to find, you know, if you've got a safe space in your home and some friends of yours do too, then sharing that makes the safe world that much larger and includes that much more people, that much more community, and that infuses life into your kids and into yourselves.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion of children in wartime.
For an audio cassette copy of Any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Ned Lazarus of Seeds of Peace about children in a time of war. When the kids participate in the Seeds of Peace summer program, how do you group them?
They're grouped according to their conflict, meaning the goal of the program is for the kids to have as much face-to-face, heart-to-heart contact with the people who are historically their enemy as possible. What that means practically is that in your bunk, if you're an Israeli, then your bunkmates are going to be Arabs. If you are an Indian, your bunkmates are going to be Pakistanis. If you are a Serb, then your bunkmates are going to be Bosnians or Croats. And the idea is that they learn to live together. Also, one of the most important parts of camp is that in addition to summer camp, sports, bunk activities, nights of singing and music, spending time on the lake together, and in addition to all the wonderful activities of summer camp that give them great experiences together as teenagers and as individuals, every day they also discuss their conflicts. The idea is not to ignore what they've been through and where they're coming from, but to help them learn to deal with it in a nonviolent way and to allow them to talk to the other side and express their pain. And one of the most important discoveries for each kid is that the other side is suffering too, that this conflict situation is difficult for everyone. In those groups, the coexistence groups, the Israelis and the Arabs are sitting and talking together. The Bosnians and the Serbs are sitting and talking together because each one of their conflicts is different, each one is unique, and the idea is for them to learn to work it out together. So the camp, the larger community, is an international community. And that's a beautiful thing. I think it's something that is also helpful. It gives them a feeling of being part of a larger world. But in the intensive work that they do, building relationships in their bunk and in their activities and discussing their conflict, they are together with the enemy group, learning not to see them as an enemy group, but to see them each as a human being with a history and a personality and a family, and learning to understand where they're coming from.
Ned, for parents to help their children deal with these issues a little bit, are there some resources you could suggest?
I spoke earlier about a book called Trauma and Recovery, which deals with the psychology of dealing with situations of extreme stress or trauma, and I think that that was something very important for me to understand the reactions of kids when violence became very extreme for the Israelis and Palestinians. And I think that that can be useful also for parents if their children have had very serious reactions to the events of September 11th and the situation here in the States as well. Our founder and president, John Wallach, has written a book called The Enemy Has a Face, The Seeds of Peace Experience, which describes the journey of Israeli and Palestinian kids learning to live together and coexist with the other side and see them as a human being. And I think this is a wonderful resource as well. And I would say, though, that the greatest resource that I've found in my work has always been the people, the families that I spoke about. As much as I provided any counseling for their kids, they showed me what it means to raise children and to keep their hope alive and make sure that they're looking towards their own future and keep them from being consumed by the hate and the anger that are the results of violence, that are the results of seeing so much violence and seeing your own society suffer.
So parents, if they can reach out to other people in the community who are different from themselves, who have different ethnic backgrounds, can also give children a sense that we're in a bigger world.
Absolutely. And I think those are the greatest resources that I've seen are the parents that I've described for you here.
You mentioned the magazine, The Olive Branch. Can people get that somewhere?
Absolutely. The Seeds of Peace website is www.seedsofpeace.org, and we will be very happy to provide any kind of information and service we can. There are many Seeds of Peace in the United States. There are many who are from other countries and are studying here, and there are many who are native-born and first-generation Americans, and we would be happy to be a resource for any parents who are trying to also raise their children in a way that provides hope, direction, and also provides the sense of being part of a world where war is not the only answer and not the only way to solve problems, but where you can learn to live in peace with individuals from the other side.
Well, you have been a wonderful resource for all of our parents who are listening across the country and around the world. So, Ned Lazarus, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Parents as Mentors. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 148. Tell us what station you're listening to if you can, since we're airing all over the world. It's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our books Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.